Vishnupada Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashutara Shuta Shishimadhi Savanga Shila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Grantara Shimabhagavatam Ki Gaur Premandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Aknana Tamirandasya Nananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Adati Swapadantikam Mancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Revacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadharha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, Text Number 45. Brahma Bhavo Bhavantascha Manavo Vibhuteshwara Vibhutayo mamahyeta Bhutanam bhutihetava Brahma bhavo bhavantascha Manavo vibhudeshvara Vibhutaya mamahita Bhutanam bhutihetava Brahma bhava bhavantascha Manavo vibhudeshvara Vibhutaya mamahita Bhutanam bhutihetava Brahma bhavo bhavantascha Manavo vibhuteshvara Vibhutayo mamayeta Bhutanam bhutetava Mothers Brahma bhavo bhavantascha Manavo vibhuteshvara Vibhutayo mamayeta Bhutanam bhutihetava Brahma bhavo bhavantascha Manavo vibhuteshvara Vibhutayo mamayeta Bhutanam bhutihetava Brahma, Lord Brahma, Bhava, Lord Shiva, Bhavanta, all of you Prajapatis, Cha, and Manava, the Manus, Vibhudha Ishwaraha, all the different demigods, such as the Sun, the Moon, Venus, Mars, and Jupiter, who are all in charge of various activities for the welfare of the world. Vibhutayaha, expansions of energy. Mama, my, he, indeed. Eta, all these. Bhutanam, of all the living entities. Bhuti, of welfare. Hetavaha, causes. Translation of Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the Manus, all the other systems, and you, Prajapatis, who are increasing the population, are working for the benefit of all living entities. Thus, you, I think it's supposed to be your, yeah, thus you expansions of my marginal energy are incarnations of my various qualities. Purport, there are various types of incarnations or expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The expansions of His personal self, or Vishnu Tattva, are called Shramsha expansions, whereas the living entities who are not Vishnu Tattva, but Jiva Tattva, are called Vibhinamsha, separated expansions, although Prajapati Daksha is not on the same level as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. He is compared to them because he engages in the service of the Lord. In the service of the Personality of Godhead, it is not that Lord Brahma is considered very great, while an ordinary human being trying to preach the glories of the Lord is considered very low. There are no such distinctions, regardless of whether materially high or materially low. Anyone engaged in the service of the Lord is spiritually very dear to him. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya gives this quotation from the Tantra Nirnaya, Vishesha Vyakti Patrutvad Brahmadhyas Tu Vibhutayaha Tadantaryaminashchaiva Matsyadhya Vibhava Shmitaha. From Lord Brahma down, all the living entities engaged in the service of the Lord are extraordinary and are called Vibhuti. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 41, Yad ya vibhuti mat sattvam srimad urjitam eva va tattad eva vagachatvam mamate drosha sambhavam. Quote, know that all the beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor, end quote. A living entity, especially in power to act on behalf of the Lord, is called Vibhuti, whereas the Vishnu Tattva incarnations of the Lord, such as the Matsya Avatar, Keshava Drita, Meena Sharira, Jai Jagadisha Hare, are called Vibhava. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, basically, Daksha is a progenitor. A progenitor means one who has the service of populating the universe. So he tried doing that service of populating the universe, but he was not able to do so effectively, in his estimation. The universe was not populating fast enough. And populating means providing the bodies for the various jivas who are conditioned in the material world. So he needed to perform some austerity in order to gain power to execute that service. By a performance of austerity, one can gain power. That is shown in many places in the Bhagavatam. Even demons become powerful by performing austerities. You can gain various sorts of mystic powers and so on just by tapasya. There are other ways you can gain powers also, by mantra, by samadhi, by herbs. It's mentioned five ways you can gain cities or powers. And one of the ways is by tapasya. So you see, even many demons become powerful by tapasya. Ravana became powerful by tapasya. Hiranyakashipu became powerful by tapasya. So in order to do his service of populating the universe, Daksha wanted to perform some tapasya. So he went to, Vindhya Hills, was it? Some Vindhya Hills, maybe. He went to perform the tapasya. And part of the execution of the tapasya was reciting the Hamsaguya prayers. So we already heard that, the various prayers that he recited to Lord Vishnu. By that execution of tapasya, he pleased the Supreme Lord. and he got darshan of the Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord came to him also by the performance of that tapasya. So then so many verses were describing that beautiful form of Vishnu that came to see, Daksha. And now the Supreme Lord is speaking to him. So that was yesterday's verse and today's verse, is Lord Vishnu responding to Daksha after his performance of tapasya. So in the previous verse, it was mentioned how basically Daksha's desire is an intense desire for sex life. Prabhupada has pointed out many times already that the word Daksha means expert. An expert here refers to expertise in sex life. One can expect no less as a progenitor of the universe that he would be expert at sex life. So his desire is basically for sex life, empowerment to perform sex life in a certain way, and to populate the universe. So Lord Vishnu in the previous verse said that this is also his desire. It is also his desire to see that the universe is populated. And in this verse also is mentioning, I think the word is bhuta hetavaha. Yeah, bhuti hetavaha means for the welfare of the universe. This is the cause of the welfare of the universe. So when the living entities get bodies, material bodies, this is for their benefit. Krishna says, this is also my desire. So one may question, the question could validly come up, why would Krishna desire anyone to take on bodies in the material world? That question can come up. Yesterday's discussion would be a... And Prabhupada, in fact, poses that particular question in the previous verse. Do you remember? I forgot. Where is that? This particular question was actually posed. Why would the Supreme Lord desire the living entities to get bodies in this material world? Because by their getting bodies, they'll get the opportunity for liberation. That is why he desires. So it is also his desire to see the universe populated with material bodies for the living entities. Because then they'll get opportunity for transcending material existence, although most do not take up that opportunity. Let me see if I can find the question quickly. Because Prabhupada poses it, I believe, in. Do you all remember reading it? Yes. Why does creation take place in such a way that the living entities are put into conditioned life to suffer the threefold miseries upon them by material nature? Taking birth in this material world means what? It means suffering, isn't it? One is suffering, threefold misery, suffering the pangs of repeated birth and death. So why would anyone want you to take birth in such a condition? That question is being posed. You understand the question? Why does the creation take place in such a way that the living entities are put into conditioned life to suffer the threefold miseries imposed upon them by the material nature? Here the Lord says to Daksha, now this is supposed to be the answer, you desire to benefit all living entities, and that is also my desire. So the benefit for all living entities is that they get material bodies by which they could strive for liberation. Although due to the influence of the avidya shakti, which is controlling this material world, no one takes up the opportunity. But at least opportunity is there. So then populating the universe is a great service in this sense, that it gives one the opportunity to help the living entity gain a facility by which he could potentially transcend the material nature, although oftentimes he does not do so because of the influence of the avidya shakti. So the Supreme Lord is giving him an assurance here. Also in this verse, the Lord is saying, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the Manus, and the other demigods, and also you Prajapatis, you are all increasing the population in this way to benefit living entities. The idea, the feeling of this verse is that you are not less than them. Because it may be somewhat embarrassing to have a very strong desire for sex life. That could be a little humbling as such, because we know if you have to go to, let's say, a mentor, your spiritual master, and tell them that I have a very strong desire for sex life, you would be a little bit humbled by that, a little bit perhaps embarrassed, perhaps you won't even divulge that. It's a little bit embarrassing, isn't it? And you may think that your position is less than someone who seems to be very steady, seemingly totally aloof from such sorts of apparently material desires. Of course, in Daksha's case, it actually is material. I'll explain in the next chapter, first verse. But the desire for sex life is generally a material desire. So it would be somewhat embarrassing to say you have a strong desire for sex life. In fact, the tendency in our duplicitous nature is not to reveal such information to anyone, that the desire for sex life is very strong.
something's coming to mind, but I better not say it. So then Dr. may feel somewhat embarrassed that he's offered the Hamsabuya prayers because of a strong desire for sex life. That's a little bit humbling that you're offering such sincere prayers. Just like suppose you see someone is offering very sincere prayers every day, like a steady. Just like sometimes you see, especially in the religious culture of Indians, you see like some Hindus coming to the temple very daily doing a certain type of ritual, very fixed every day. And then you may ask them, why are you doing it? I've never seen you before this time. Now I'm seeing you all the time. And he said, one test is coming up. I have to pass that test, and therefore I'm doing some ritual to make sure that I pass that test. Isn't it? Also, there some stories there where one man, he was not devoted to anything. He didn't believe in the demigods or Krishna or anything. But he was a businessman. He was opening one store. So before he had the official opening for the store, he had some puja of Ganesh go on. So one devotee was there asking him, I thought you didn't believe in the devatas and Krishna and all these things. He said, I don't, but just in case, I'm doing some puja, some worship. So you see, persons will worship the Supreme Lord for material desires. Christians also mention Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Jana Sukriti Narjuna. That if for persons, pious individuals, Sukriti Jana, those who are pious people, they approach the Supreme Lord for various reasons. Ator, Jignasura, Tarti Gyani. They're not considered even neophytes in the pure devotional service according to Rupa Goswami's categorization. They approach the Lord for because of their distress, because they're requiring some material remuneration. And so such was the case with Daksha. He has this very strong desire for sex life, and therefore he's offering prayers to the Supreme Lord, very sincerely the Hamsabuya prayers. So now, from such offering prayers, the Supreme Lord has actually come before him to fulfill that desire for sex life, in fact. So it might be a little bit humbling. And so one may feel that I am not as good as others because my desire is very materialistic, which may be objectively speaking a fact. But here, Vishnu is saying that you are as good as others. So he's saying here, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the other demigods in the higher planetary systems, they also have such desires. That's the point. They also have such desires. So this desire is not just unique for you. They are also having such desires. In other words, I'm getting this feeling from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has one sentence for this verse. And this is a sentence that you are not less than the others. That was the sentence for this purport. That you are not less than the others. So just because you have this strong desire for sex life, you should not think that you are less than others because they are also having such desires. And why are they having such desires? There's two reasons. Reason number one, this is also my desire. Krishna's already expressed it in the previous verse, Vishnu. That this is also my desire. And also, this will benefit entities by providing them material bodies by which they have the potential to transcend the material world. So there's nothing you should feel. You should not feel yourself less than them because of having a strong desire which seems clearly materialistic. So then Prabhupada's purport expanding on that idea is mentioning that there are different types of expansions of the Supreme Lord. One type of expansion is called Vishnu Tattva. They're called Shramsha expansions or personal expansions of the Lord. Prabhupada compares them to like the limbs of the body. Personal expansions are compared to the limbs of the body. And then you have Vibhinamsha expansions, which are separate expansions, and they're compared to the hairs on one's body. Prabhupada gives us an analogy in one of the lectures we were hearing on Sunday. Personal expansions are compared to the limbs that expand directly from the body, and then the separate expansions are compared to the hairs, which expand from the limbs of the body. Understand? That's a cool analogy, a cool, easy way to picture it. Huh? Personal expansion directly expands from Krishna, like the limbs, and the separate expansions expand from the limbs themselves. So jiva tattva, especially the conditioned soul, is a shakti of the paramatma. Understand? Jiva tattva is a shakti of the paramatma. He's a shakti of the personal expansion of the Supreme Lord, generally called as Purusha Avatar, as Mahavishnu. Understand? Jiva is a shakti of Purusha, Paramatma, Mahavishnu. And so there are certain types of expansions who are empowered for performing some particular service to Krishna, like the demigods. They have certain type of powers by which they perform various services to Krishna's material world. They are the reason for the success of material existence, in fact. Krishna has spoken of this in the Bhagavad Gita, of the cooperation between the devatas and humanity. Humanity should perform yajnas, and when they perform yajnas, the devatas will provide them the material facility, such as air, water, etc. So the success of material existence depends on this cooperation. So these devatas are empowered to maintain the universe. I think Prabhupada compares it to Krishna to the president and the demigods to the cabinet members who are part of the legislation for help maintaining the government. So similarly, these demigods are called as vibhutis, who are specifically empowered for some particular service to Vishnu, whether it be the rain, the water, maintaining the land, and so on. These are called vibhutis. So Prabhupada is expanding this idea that desire for sex life as a progenitor of the universe, it is not that you are less than these others, because this is also an important aspect of service in the material universe. So then Prabhupada compares it to a person who may be an ordinary living entity, but trying to preach the glories of the Supreme Lord. Although he doesn't have the powers of a Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva, or the capacity in terms of service even, but because he is sincerely trying to preach the glories of the Lord, Prabhupada is giving this comparison here, he should not be considered less than Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. He is also a vibhuti because he is serving the Supreme Lord. So anyone, in other words, one is an ordinary jiva, but by connection to the Supreme Lord and some service, one becomes an extraordinary jiva, a vibhuti, by which the material universe is maintained. Krishna and Prabhupada quotes this verse from Bhagavad Gita, how, what is the need for so much detailed information? By just a fragment of my opulence, a fragment of my vibhuti, I can maintain this whole universe. So similarly, just by someone who's performing any type of service to Krishna, they come to the status of a vibhuti, one who is assisting Krishna in the maintenance of this world. Just like Lord Chaitanya is called as Vishvambara. Why is he called as Vishvambara? Vishvambara means what? One man who maintains the universe, right? So why is he called as Vishvambara? Krishnadas Raj Goswami gives a specific reason why he is called as Vishvambara. How does Lord Chaitanya maintain the universe? Close. Good guess. He's distributing prema. That's how he's maintaining the universe, which is a real necessity of the universe. In fact, Krishnadas Gaviraj Goswami says when Krishna was introspecting, you understand? Krishna introspects too, so we also should introspect. Krishna was doing some introspection, and what is the result of Krishna's introspection? Gaur Lila. Understand? When Krishna introspects, the result is Gaur Lila. So Krishna was introspecting after he performed his pastimes with Krishna. He goes back to his abode, and he thinks, I didn't do a good job in distributing. I actually came in this universe to distribute love of God as found in Vrindavan. Prema rasa niryasya karite sadhana. He wanted to taste that also. Then rag marg bhakti loke karite pracharan. Then he wanted to preach the path of rag marg by which the entities of this world could also experience that braj bhakti. But he didn't feel that he did a good job of doing so. And he says, Lord Chaitanya is saying this, or Krishna is saying this, that without experiencing Braja Prema, there is no use to this whole universe. No use whatsoever. This whole universe becomes instantly useless unless the living entities are given opportunity to taste Braja Prema. So then, out of the result of his introspecting this way, gives rise to Gaur Lila. And Gaur Lila, of course, is Krishna distributing Prema freely. And by this distribution of Prema, he maintains the universe. Understand? So similarly, these vibhutis of the Lord, they are empowered and populating the universe. They're called as vibhutis. Then the various devata planet function, they are also called vibhutis. So these vibhutis, even a fragment of one of Krishna's vibhutis can maintain the universe. So similarly, Prabhupada has a comparison here. Those who are trying to distribute Krishna consciousness, as Lord Chaitanya is distributing Krishna consciousness, those who are trying to distribute Krishna realized devotees who are distributing Krishna consciousness, they are vibhutis also. By even one devotee, they can maintain the whole universe. Prabhupada has also said this. One time when Prabhupada was having discussion with Vishnujan, Prabhupada said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was all powerful, that he himself could have delivered the whole universe. So Vishnujan Maharaj asked the question, then why is it he didn't do it? If he can do it, why he didn't do it? And Prabhupada said, because he left us something to do. Otherwise, we would be without any service. So he's given us some opportunity to render some service. So a devotee who is distributing Krishna consciousness also, or rendering any service of Godhead, which is maintaining the living entities, understand? Just like someone is maintaining services on the altar, this also maintains the living entities. Because if there was no deity worship, they would become atheistic. Bhakti Nautar Kaur makes a compelling argument for this. That without having a form to meditate on, and without being able to connect qualities to some form and activities to some form, then the living entities will be lost in mental speculation. And in fact, they'll come to think that any form is a glorification of the form of the Lord. In fact, in the New Age presentation of spirituality is often conceived in this way, that we are all forms of the Supreme Lord. So without having some form to meditate on, we can easily move into an atheistic position. So therefore, those who maintain a deity worship, they are also vibhutis, because they are helping to maintain the entities who need deity worship in order to progress in their spiritual life, in order to progress in their relationship to Krishna, understand? Similarly, those who make prasadam offered to the Supreme Lord, they are also vibhutis because they are maintaining so many living entities, isn't it? It's like Kishore Temple maintains so many living entities in Rajas Park area. A little bit less than it used to. When I first joined the temple, every day at lunchtime, 50 to 70 people will come to the temple. All guys, none of them were like regular members in our temple, but they knew Bishop Karma used to cook a whole lot of prasadam. And so at lunchtime, so many people will come, like 50 people will come for lunch, at least 50 people. Every day was coming. Of course, when Krishna Smaran Prabhu came, he stopped all that. And then it came a little reduced, but it couldn't stop it. Still, so many living entities figure out a way to sneak in and take prasadam. So those who are making the prasadam, they are vibhuti, and because they are serving the Supreme Lord, and that service is maintaining so many living entities. Understand? That's the point, that the vibhuti is performing some service that is maintaining the living entities in this world. They're called as vibhutis, empowered personalities, empowered jivas, who are performing some service to the Supreme Lord that is maintaining the living entities in this world. Understand? So Prabhupada is saying, although Lord Brahma's service to the Supreme Lord is very great, we cannot say that our service is comparable to his, creating the universe, performing the action function of the secondary creation. We cannot say that our service is comparable to his, but in whatever small way someone is serving the Supreme Lord and that service is maintaining the living entities, he comes in the category of vibhuti. So there is no question, Prabhupada says here in the purport, there is no question of high and low. There are no such distinctions. This is a high activity, this is a low one. Regardless of whether materially high or materially low, anyone engaged in the service of the Lord is spiritually very dear to him. And he is called as a vibhuti. So one performs some service of the Supreme Lord, and that service is helping to maintain a living entity. He is called a vibhuti. Ya ya vibhuti mat sattvam, Krishna says this thing. And is very dear to the Supreme Lord. So the feeling of the verse, as I'm gleaning from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's one sentence statement on this purport, the feeling of the verse is that you're not less than them. In other words, Daksha may be having some, some shortcoming. This actually happens with all the devotees. Dhruva Maharaj had a very big material desire also. And then when the Supreme Lord appeared before him and he realized what was the glory of the Supreme Lord, juxtaposed next to his petty desire for material existence, then he realized how foolish I am. So obviously having the darshan of the Lord creates this sentiment in those who can see him, that what was the use of my pettiness? Just like sometimes when we're in the beginning stages of our spiritual life, we become absorbed in very petty things. And then when you make advancement in your Krishna consciousness, when your consciousness is becoming more Krishnized, then you start to realize, what was the use of so much pettiness that I was so much absorbed in before? Similarly, they're thinking this way. Having the darshan of the Lord, or that's getting closer and closer to Krishna in our consciousness, then it gives rise to this sentiment of, what is the use of all the things that I was desiring? It was such useless things. And one feels himself embarrassed. So Dhruva Maharaj felt embarrassed. And the feeling is that Daksha may also feel embarrassed. I have this really strong desire for sex life. So Vishnu is assuring him, don't worry, you are not less than the others. For two reasons. One reason, previous verse, is that this is also my desire. Reason number two, this will benefit the living entities. Just be footnoted here that although his service is not less, we will see that Daksha never prayed for bhakti. So this point, Prabhupada's going to make this point coming up. Dhruva Maharaj felt embarrassed for his material desire, and then he offered prayers to the Supreme Lord, and when he prayed for bhakti. But Daksha doesn't, he still prays for his sex life only. I need that empowerment. He never prays for bhakti, and this was due to the influence of his offense to Lord Shiva in the previous kalpas, in the first, the first period of Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, where he offended Lord Shiva. Due to that influence of that aparat, although he got darshan, the Supreme Lord, he could not ask for bhakti. Which is quite interesting because this creates a contrast with the first story we hear about Ajamil, where he was like sitting and grinning, practically speaking, but he was chanting the name of the Supreme Lord without offense, and he gained the spiritual world. Whereas Daksha is performing everything very nicely, and he also gets the darshan of the Lord. And yet, he was not able to pray for bhakti because of the influence of some offense. So although Krishna is assuring him that you are not less, you are also vibhuti, because you're performing some service to me, which is maintaining living entities in this world. Still, he could not pray for bhakti because of the influence of the offense. So that will be purported coming up in a few verses. Anyone wants to ask any questions about this? Okay. Mother Danica, you ask a question.
So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that there's various types of personalities that approach him with some desire, but they're considered pious because they approach the Lord for their desire, and they might even be able to dovetail their the result of getting that benediction to have their desire. They might be able to dovetail that in the Lord's service. And then we also hear that one of the symptoms of surrender, well, so the previous people, they're going to the Lord and saying, this is my desire, please make my desire your desire. Please take my desire and somehow engage it in devotional service. But one of the symptoms of surrender, shapa, is that one approaches the Lord in the mood of, let your desire be my desire. So I was just feeling a little concerned here about the point that, well, one shouldn't feel less in one sense because one's telling their desires in the Lord's service. But there seems to be a great danger for us who are neophytes to try to follow Daksha's example of, you know, being attached to our desires and going to the Lord to fulfill those desires with the hope that maybe I can dovetail that in the Lord's service, as opposed to cultivating the mood of, oh my Lord, let your desire be my desire. So I was wondering if you could comment on that as far as a practical application point for those of us who obviously have desires and we want to go to the Lord with our desires, but yet we want to be surrendered and say, oh my Lord, let your desires be my desires, not the other way around.
Yeah, sure. Well, two things. Number one, as I mentioned in my discussion, that this verse of Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Dinasa Kriti Narjuna, these four categories of persons are outside of the realm of pure devotional service, at least in the categorization of Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. They're not even neophytes in the pure devotional platform. They can come to the platform of being a neophytic service by association with Bhagavan or his devotee. So then the examples are given for the distressed person. The example is given is Gajendra, and by association with Bhagavan, he got elevated to pure devotional service. For the Jignasu, the sages of Naimisharanya are given, who became elevated to pure devotional service by association with Sutta Goswami. The example for the material distressed Dhruva Maharaj, who also became elevated to pure devotional service, you can say implicitly by the association of Narada Muni, and then after seeing the Supreme Lord by the association of Bhagavan. And then the Gani mention is the Kumaras who came elevated to pure devotional service by the association of Tosi Maharani. So as I mentioned in my class, this sort of four categories of persons are outside of the realm of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service, of course, includes Sharanagati. In other words, pure devotional service essentially means when I'm speaking, etc. The nine expressions of bhakti, this is pure devotional service. Just to perform those things is pure devotional service. Included within that is Sharanagati. So whenever these aspects are discussed, it is Sharanagati plus one of the angas of bhakti. You know, Sharanagati plus Shravana, Sharanagati plus Kirtana. In other words, without Sharanagati, then your bhakti is lifeless, is without any life air. I've often mentioned this, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his prayers, Sharanagati prayers, the very first prayer, he mentions that Lord Chaitanya came to teach Sharanagati, Shikaya Sharanagati Bhakatera Pran, which is the life air of bhakti, or the life air of the bhakta. So I've often mentioned, just as life air is that by which your working senses can move. If you don't have any prana, then your working senses cannot do any movement. Just like sometimes you may have been winded. I don't know if anyone has this experience of being winded. Someone knocks you down and you're winded. So when you're winded, your working senses can't function. Your legs can't move, your hands can't move, your voice. So similarly, Bhakatera Pran, the life air of bhakti is Sharanagati. So if someone is performing bhakti, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, that is bhakti. So someone may be doing bhakti, but if it's minus Sharanagati, then that bhakti cannot move them very effectively to the goal of life. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur is prayed like that. And there are nice stories there. I'm not going to go through the whole story, the instructive story, not a cute story, an instructive one. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta tells of the man who wanted to get married, and he had to get married at the auspicious time. And in order to reach the place to get married at the auspicious time, he had to cross the river. So he and all his family members, in-laws, and everyone, or soon to be in-laws, they all came to get on the boat to go into the other side of the river to get married at the auspicious time. So the boatman said, "I can take you there, don't worry." They need to be there at 4 a.m. So he was rowing the boat, whole night he was rowing the boat, and then they woke up daytime, the boat hadn't moved anywhere. Boat was still there only. So then the bridegroom, he said, "What is this nonsense? You said you can get us across the ocean, we're not there in time." He said, "I've been rowing the whole night. I don't know what happened." Everyone was arguing. Finally, it was realized that he didn't lift the anchor in the mud. So the anchor was still there, and therefore, although he was rowing the whole night, the boat didn't move. Understand? I told the story in a shortcut way, but you got the essence of the story, yes? You understand? So similarly, Gorgo Vinamaraj explains this story very nicely, all the various details. I won't do that now. But one point that comes out of the story from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is that the point of the boat all throughout the night is compared to our sadhana bhajan. So you may be doing lots of heavy sadhana, but if the anchor of material attachment has not been lifted, then that sadhana bhajan cannot produce a result of getting you to the other side of the ocean to marry the girl at the auspicious time, which is compared to establishing our relationship with Krishna. So one may be doing a lot of sadhana bhajan, but if that Sharanagati is not there, which will allow you to uplift the anchor. So this is the point that you're expressing. Part of the mood of Sharanagati is that I may have so many desires, kind of like self-abnegation, leaving those material desires aside and accepting the desires of the Lord, the Guru Parampara through our Guru, accepting those desires as ourselves. That's the mood of Sharanagati. So without that, then the anchor cannot be lifted. So you may do a lot of heavy sadhana bhajan, but that sadhana bhajan would not produce the result of actual Krishna consciousness. So my message was not, I didn't have a message per se, to be honest with you. I never really do. I just try to explain the exact feeling of the particular sort of verse. And the feeling was that in the realm, some service has to go on in the maintenance of the universe. So there are mixed devotees there who help to facilitate that. They're namely called devatas. They have a lot of devotion, but they are also mixed. So Krishna knows that, and so they're being engaged according to their desire. There is no desire for Sharanagati in their particular case. There's another case also in the Bhagavatam in the third canto with Kardama Muni, and this example comes up in a few verses later, where he also has some service of having children, and he performed tapasya for like 10,000 years or something, I think. Which is give some insight to if you want to have kids, I guess. top of 10,000 years. Anyway, sometime at least. He had to, and then when he saw the Supreme Lord, there was also some desire in him, but that desire did not overwhelm him. He ultimately had desire for the Supreme Lord. So when the Supreme Lord came before him, he shunned his material attraction completely and just prayed to the Lord to take him up out of material existence. A few verses are quoted in that regard. So that's why I mentioned the point at the end of the class that like Dhruva or Kardama Muni, there was some desire. But upon association with Bhagavan, or the Bhakta, as I've mentioned earlier, then they will gain the insight of the and ask for the real thing, ask for the devotional service of the Lord. The only reason Daksha did not do that was due to the influence of his aparad to Shiva in a previous life. So that was the only reason why the association of Bhagavan and Bhakta didn't have that influence on his consciousness, because of offense. Otherwise, what we see for those who are without offense, the association of Bhagavan and Bhakta causes the movement of Sharanagati to rise in their heart, which is otherwise called the Shraddha, because the external expression of Shraddha is Sharanagati. So by association with Bhagavan and Bhakta, Shraddha comes up, and as Shraddha is increased, Sharanagati becomes more and more strong as Shraddha is increased. So there would be no question of trying to make my desires the Lord's desires. Daksha's aparad, that mood of Sharanagati could not rise in his heart. Otherwise, by seeing the Lord, certainly would have arisen in his heart, because that's the nature of seeing the Supreme. You see gold juxtaposed to steel, then naturally you have desire for gold. Only way you couldn't have desire for gold is if you were insane. So that's the influence of aparad. It creates a sort of insanity where anything but the Lord is more attractive. And so such was the case in Daksha's scenario. So that's how I would describe it. Okay, Luke. Did you want to ask something?
Me too. Looking at it from the Lord's perspective, he is expressing, at least my understanding, he's expressing that everyone has a place and everyone has a service. Sometimes I might think that my service is really not so glamorous. Someone else has a very glamorous service. In this case, in the pages of Bhagavatam, we only know Daksha as the man with
strong sex desire.
And, you know, but Krishna is expressing that also has place. And don't think of yourself as less in the sense that that activity has certain purpose, bhuti hetava. And in that sense, you're similar to Brahma, Shiva, the other progenitors, the Manus. So the comparison is not with pure devotees. He doesn't say you're like the Mahajanas. In this case, Brahma and Shiva are not referred to as, they're referred to as the particular personalities that have function within the material realm.
As progenitors also, Lord Brahma.
But not as pure devotees, not as the Mahajanas where they set pure devotional standards. He's not compared to, don't think you're not like Narada and all the great Ambarish Maharaj, not like that. So he's given a peer group of comparison that your service also has its place. It's not pure devotional, but it has its place, and that place has meaning for me as the Lord, because I want to see, as you were explaining, that the living entity should also get bodies and they perform their karmic activities, etc.
Yeah, so that was that's the point that I just wanted to express in class, but it was nice to, well, what about us? Because we might take the wrong message. So just to clarify, this is not in the realm of pure devotional service. But Krishna is very accommodating personality, as is the Vedas. They're very accommodating. Yes. But of course, as a pure devotional movement, we want to underscore the reality of the situation. This isn't pure devotional service. Okay, Luke, what do you want to say?
Hello. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. You were mentioning Gaura Lila. Here we're doing our best to carry on the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So my question is it possible to derive the same degree of benefit living in this location as it is to live in a place like Vrindavan or Mayapur Dham?
I mean, the answer is yes. Are there some specifics? The answer is yes. The main element would be the principle of yogya is effective everywhere. Particularly, as many of you know, I always want to go to Vrindavan, you know, as soon as I get a chance. And there was a time where I was really considering leaving Chicago when things were really bad and just going to, absconding to Vrindavan. Fortunately or unfortunately, I was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Shastra has been my saving grace living in this temple so many years. People ask me, how if I stay so long in one spot? And my answer is always the Bhagavatam and CC, because literally when I would be in really tough spots and ready to take some rash decisions, I would be reading, studying something, it was like Shastra was speaking to me. So I was wanting to leave to go to Vrindavan, and of course I was hearing Ayendra Prabhu, who is, you know, means so much to me, and everything that he speaks means a lot to me. And he would do the math. You get 100 times the benefit of staying in Vrindavan than any other place, and he would do the math. So if you take 12 years, that's like one lifetime. So, and then he would calculate it. So it's like staying in Vrindavan for one lifetime is like 100 lifetimes staying anywhere else. And therefore, you know, in this way, very compelling argument, at least for me. So I was really thinking about going to Vrindavan. At the time, I was reading chapter 15 or 16, 15 and 16 of Chaitanya Charitamrita. In chapter 15, Lord Chaitanya asks Nityananda to go to Bengal and preach, and don't come back to Jagannath Puri. He comes back anyway. So when he comes back to Puri, Lord Chaitanya is like, can I talk to you? And he talked to you in private, you know. And so he talks to Lord Nityananda in private, and he says, why have you come back to Puri? I asked you to go to Bengal. Only you are able to spread Krishna consciousness in Bengal. Why have you come here? You know, only I can. My desire is to spread Krishna consciousness in Bengal, and only you can do it. So if you keep returning back to Puri, my desire would not be satisfied. And so then Nityananda kind of responded, you are the life, the soul, and I'm just the body, so whatever is your desire, I have to carry out. And so at that time, he goes back to Bengal, not to return for some time to Puri. So Prabhupada comments in the purport of this verse, which was very like, thinking about leaving. Prabhupada said, is Lord coming to Vrindavan or Jagannath Puri? He uses those two examples particularly. Jagannath Puri Vrindavan is most auspicious. So are we to understand that the Lord is asking Nityananda Prabhu to do something that is not auspicious? You know, he poses a question in this way. And to answer, Prabhupada says no. Because the desire to satisfy the desire of the Lord is most auspicious, is topmost. And because it was the desire of the Lord that Nityananda preach in Bengal, so that was more important than staying in Jagannath Puri or Vrindavan for one's own sense gratification. And Prabhupada makes some comment like that. Now this discussion can be very nuanced. I'm not trying to present a very black and white picture about it. But the answer is, as a general point, yes, anyone can get the same benefit anywhere. But there are details which I'll choose not to discuss at present, but the answer in a simple way is yes. Now, really, it depends on your mood of Sharanagati and to Guru and to Krishna. That will make all the difference. Because many people stay in Vrindavan for other reasons, especially nowadays because it's becoming like a metropolitan city. And especially around Krishna Balaram Mandir, they know Westerners will come and buy property. So you have all these businessmen from all across India. They don't stay in Vrindavan or anything. All across India coming to Vrindavan, particularly around Krishna Balaram Mandir, and they're erecting all these sense gratification places, hotels and restaurants and all sorts of things which is not Vrindavan life. In fact, you know, they say when you go to Vrindavan, you're not supposed to come back you're not supposed to go there with a return ticket, you know. Such as the spirit of going to Vrindavan, it's the spirit of renunciation. Some places, Prabhupada is told that women should not be allowed to stay in Vrindavan for more than 3 days. like heavy statements but he said, I cannot say that. There are statements where Prabhupada made such things. Or Grihastha should not stay for more than 3 days in Vrindavan. Like this. In other words, Vrindavan is supposed to be a place of renunciation. And so when you go there, it's really for renouncing life and the mood of Goswami. That's what Vrindavan life was supposed to be. Of course, it's become something else now. So as a general point, the answer is yes, and even if someone thinks going to Vrindavan is better, because in a lot of ways it is, but what will you do in Vrindavan if you don't have Sharanagati, which means Ruchi? If you don't have Ruchi, what will be your life in Vrindavan? It will be simply a life of sense enjoyment, as it is seen today. So those who are on such high levels of devotional service like Ruchi, they can decide what is best for them in accordance with their guru. Otherwise, before the state of Ruchi, then there should be careful step-by-step guidance to get to that level of consciousness by which one could do it authentically. Otherwise, you become a sense enjoyer in Vrindavan, which is seen today. You want to say something, Paramkun? I told? Anything else anyone wants to say? Okay, fine.
Thank you. That was helpful. For persons who cannot physically go, then they can. There, it's encouraged one can reside mentally.
Anyway, you know, to reside there mentally means how controlled your mind would have to actually be, evolved, and that's actually kind of the point. That where should you, how your mind should be developed to really reside in Vrindavan. Body may be in Vrindavan, but mine is in America, as is often to be found. Of course, there's still an advantage if you're in Vrindavan. Even if your mind is in America, you still get the benefits of residing in Vrindavan. In fact, the glory of Vrindavan is so much told by Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur in his Vrindavan Mahamrita, which that book has some extraordinary things. He says, I would rather live in Vrindavan as a non-devotee than to stay as a self-realized devotee realized in one of the four rasas in relationship to Krishna anywhere else. So he's like, I may realize my relationship with Krishna in one of the four rasas and anywhere else in the world, but I don't prefer that than sustain in Vrindavan as a non-devotee. Such is the position of Vrindavan. He tries to attract our hearts to Vrindavan, such as the land of Vrindavan. And if you read Prabodhananda Saraswati's Vrindavan Mahamrita, you'll see many statements like that, which is like mind-boggling and inspiring also to see the type of devotion that is there. But we should not imitate. Imitate means to try to follow without any inner substance. So, but to have that inner substance, there can be devotees who have genuinely achieved such inner substance and they have such desire also. In fact, one of the qualities of coming to the Bhava platform is a strong desire to remain in a place where Krishna actually performed his pastimes. So it's not surprising that advanced devotees would have such desire, or at least if they don't reside there, have strong desire to make the place that they stay in resemble Vrindavan. Just like Rupa and Sanatana Goswamis, before they were Goswamis, they had Gupta Vrindavan. And where were they staying that time? Ramkeli. And they had Gupta Vrindavan was there. So some place that would remind them of Vrindavan because they were staying outside of Vrindavan at the time. So it's not surprising that the more advanced the devotee comes, especially in the Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage, because our ideal is Braja Krishna. So it's not at all surprising that as we're moving toward the goal of life, that this strong Vrindavan consciousness arises in the heart. So the desire to be there, the desire to make the place where you stay like Vrindavan, not only in terms of the way things look, but in terms of spirit of Vrindavan, which is a lot harder to erect. The spirit is very profound spirit, where you put Krishna's enjoyment first over anything else. So, like this general point. Okay, anything else?
Just to add to your point to Lu Prabhu's question, like, you know, going to a dham and staying there. Prabhupada said that every temple is Vaikuntha. It's a Vaikuntha. And it's very hard to experience that in a conditioned state, to see, like, you know, in the Western world, in Chicago, this is Vaikuntha. But every time the desire that, you know, of course, the hankering is always there to be in the dham. You know, there's that attraction is always there. But something that many times when I felt like when the thoughts went to going to somewhere else and being where I am, I was told that that's a good indicator to go within and find out, like make it more personal. I didn't say what's prompting that desire. Is it the genuine love for Krishna and I want to be in the Dham and to serve, or is it something else? Nice indicator to fix that, because if that's not fixed, even if we are in the Dham, it will project. And mistakes, especially done in the Dham, will be much greater. You know, the reactions will be greater, so we have to be careful. So since then, since I was told that, you know, I always take this opportunity as, oh, it's something that I can learn about myself. So that's another way of, like, you know, looking at those kind of desires.
A resident, Rajavasi, has to invite us to Vrindavan.
Well, you know, we have one Rajavasi, Ayanjirabhu, everyone, in a very forceful sort of way. And a lot of us who you know, have been inspired by him, this is where that kind of desire comes from, to be honest with you. But a lot of us, it came from associating with Ayanjirabhu. On a personal level, I never wanted to go to Vrindavan, because the way we hear about Vrindavan, at least the way I was hearing about Vrindavan at the time, particularly Vrindavan, was that you got to be careful. If you do offense, this is magnified. And people in Vrindavan, they just do sense gratification. This is really true. This is not like a joke. This is. So then I never had a desire to go to Vrindavan. When I went to Chaupati, I was like, that is Vrindavan. And that was, I was totally satisfied with that. And the only, and then this is my first trip to India in 2007. So I stayed in Chaupati for 2 months, and it was a fantastic experience, especially being with Gauranga Priyaprabhu, who was very dear to me. And so that was all the Vrindavan I needed. And then I went to Vrindavan for 6 days because the temple wanted me to bring back some stuff for the gift shop. And I was even mad that I had to go to Vrindavan for 6 days. I didn't even want to go. And I went, and I was like, all right, since I have to be there, Braj Mahan was going to be there to take me around to various places. So the first day we got there, the first night, we went to the temple hall to hear Ayanjirabhu's kirtan. And I had already been listening to Ayanjirabhu's kirtan for some time, but I wasn't like a huge fan or anything like that, because I've met many musician devotees in our movement and they were less than satisfying in terms of the devotional aspect. So I was kind of thinking Ayanjirabhu might be just be like a nice musician sort of devotee. So I went to his first kirtan, and the very first mantra he sang, I was just like, oh my God, what is this? It just blew me away. And I had a chance to exchange with him. And the way he dealt with me that first trip was like, so I didn't even desire to go anywhere else after that. I think I may have shared some of these stories with you. But I remember one time, Braj Mahan finally convinced me to go to the various temples of the Goswamis. I was like, I don't want to go. He was asking me the whole, and he was mad at me because he came with me just to take me around. And I wasn't going anywhere. I didn't want to leave the complex because I was like, Ayanjirabhu may come down anytime and I'll miss it. I don't. Finally, he convinced me at 4 o'clock in the afternoon to go to some places nearby. So I said, okay, as long as we're back by 5:30, because the kirtan will start at 6. We got back at 6:15. I was furious, because they tricked me. They told me that we will be back in time, and we got back 15 minutes. And I was like, okay, don't make offense, don't make offense, don't make offense, don't make offense, because... So we got to the place, and I ran outside of the rickshaw, and I ran into the kirtan. You can't get a seat. When Ayanjirabhu was there, you didn't get a seat unless you were there an hour earlier. So I was going to go sit in the back somewhere and just try to get the last rhythms of the kirtan. And in the middle of the kirtan, he was chanting, Ayanjirabhu said, Haribo! So I turned around and he was pointing at me. He had an asan because it was winter time. He took his asan out and said, sit right here. And then next to the seat, I sat down, and this happened several times. Another time, Chandramali Maharaj was there that time also. So I was sitting in the kirtan waiting for him to come. Ayanjirabhu, everyone, we were all waiting. So Maharaj was talking to me, something, I don't remember what it was about. And then Ayanjirabhu came down to start kirtan, and he said, Haribo, let's go. I said, sorry, Maharaj. And I jumped up. So he kind of like reeled me in, you know, with his affection. And then by the end of the trip, he was preaching to me, of course, to stay in Vrindavan. He didn't have to preach to me. I was already like convinced, sold out, I'm going to come to Vrindavan. And that's where that desire kind of came from. So, and then Ayanjirabhu would also speak in such a way that many of us were aware of our acute disqualifications. But he was speaking in such a way as if that didn't really make a difference. It wasn't, that was like inconsequential. So a lot of us generally don't deserve to actually stay in the Dham. We don't have the qualification by far. And a lot of where that desire may be coming from is association with devotees. They hear certain vibrations, which creates a samskara, that it's okay, even if I am not qualified. People follow that path. I chose not to. For several reasons, I chose not to stay. Although it really crushed me at one point. I was crushed for a year, but I recovered eventually. So, a lot of these desires, a lot of the desires that we have are coming from the types of samskaras that we pick up from various vibrations by which...
Like as you were glorifying Ayanta Prabhu's association, is the association...
Yes.
Because we don't have where we are in, at least this is my understanding, yes, I may be wrong, right. Where we are in our Krishna consciousness to access Vrindavan, it's not possible. Yes. But it is through the association of senior devotees who have the taste and the experience. By associating through them, we have that kind of an experience, you know. Almost it's like they chew it and they give it to us, yes, and we enjoy it and we appreciate it. So unfortunately, in his absence, we have to be very cautious. Who is the devotee when we go to the Dham? Am I going to take association from? Because it's very easy to get lost in a place. Nice. Like for instance, for me, Chicago is like that. Because there's a personal association with His Holiness Romapada Swami, because he has invested so much, and I see through his sacrifices and his vision, and because there's a personal connection, it may sometimes things may seem so tough and don't want to be here, want to run away, but it's because of that association. It's always the association of all the devotees, that keeps us here. So that's the point I was making. So when the desire comes, I want to shift, or the pulling is very strong, very carefully it has to be contemplated and consulted, so that when eventually we go to the Dham, there is an association, somebody who can take care of us, who can help us understand our inspirations in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there's this big fear, and I've seen many times devotee getting lost. Because they're attracted to the Dham, and there's so many other things that can distract if there's not somebody to carefully take care of us.
Yes, definitely. I think you have my Kalyana Kalpataru book still.
Yes, I still
do. So you can go and see that song number 14 of the first, the Upadesha section. Mm-hmm. That song is just what you just said in a few verses, where he says that place where Shuddha Bhaktas reside, then that water is Jamuna, those mountains are Govardhan, that land is Vrindavan, wherever those Shuddha Bhaktas are residing. So I also, for me, that Vrindavan meant Ayanta Prabhu. Someone asked me one time, what was your favorite place in Vrindavan? And I said, Ayanta Prabhu. And they said, no, what was your favorite place? And I said, Ayanta Prabhu. That was my favorite place. So, and for many of us, Vrindavan meant Ayanta Prabhu, actually. So after his departure, a lot of devotees who are regularly seen to go to Vrindavan stop coming. And I remember even a Kinchana Krishna Prabhu, who I don't know if he stays there now, but he said, we were all afraid that after Ayanta Prabhu left, that Vrindavan was going to fall apart, because they recognized a lot of people were coming because of his kirtans, because of his association. So I definitely echo your message there. And I'm attracted to go to Vrindavan, but it definitely doesn't have the same experience, because conditioned as we are, we don't have access. And whatever access we thought we had was because, and in fact, we didn't even care if we had access or not. Access or not was like a secondary thing. It was that association was available, and that was what was important. And if we got access to the Dham or not was like inconsequential, in that sense. So I definitely echo that sentiment. As does Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you can see it's a very beautiful thing, I think. Kalyana Kalpataru. All right, thank you all for dealing with me. I did the best I could today. Shri the Prabhupada Ki. Jai.